We've got a great podcast for you. We start with Ilhan Omar, the congresswoman, and her connections to really bad people, which is a special we're doing tonight on the Blaze TV.
Yeah, you can check that out at blazetv.com, and you can use the promo code BECK to save $10 to subscribe, but you should be subscribing already, and then you get to watch the show and so many others.
This one's really, really important, and it's just part one of this. We've got other people to expose. Also, AOC's welfare call, she actually was talking about the welfare queens that President Reagan, who was a racist because he was talking about this group of people. Well, no, he wasn't. He was actually talking about one person in particular, and Pat brought that to play today.
Yep. We'll also go into parenting and your
dating.
Dating your daughter beginning to date, as one of our researchers has had happen recently, and that's a scary, scary thought.
Lindsey Graham has a new red flag gun confiscation bill. And the anti-capitalism talk at South by Southwest, how is that playing in Silicon Valley? And the meaning of all of this change with AI from an insider in Silicon Valley. You don't want to miss today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
I want to bring in Jason Buttrill, who is our chief researcher and a guy that has worked with me for a very long time. And quite honestly, we're starting to find some things that are really spooky as hell. And I want to talk to you a little bit about socialism because we found something. You know, when we were at Fox, we always talked about top down, bottom up, inside out. And we talked about how they did it to Hungary. Well, Hungary, actually, and I don't know how we missed this, Hungary was not the first place the socialists tried it, the communists. And they started calling themselves socialists intentionally and changed language. The first place they flipped was Czechoslovakia, and they did it within 3 years. And it was a pro-free market civilization that wanted nothing to do with communism, and they flipped it behind the Iron Curtain in 3 years. We've just found something that was never supposed to come out from behind the Iron Curtain, and we found the original plan on how to do it, and you are not going to believe how much of it has already been done here in just the last few years. Also, at that CARE thing in Chicago this weekend, who is the Tlaib?
Tlaib, yeah.
Tlaib. She was speaking at the CARE convention or hearing or whatever it was, and she was one of the keynote speakers, and she was talking about how, you know, we're here now, and we are in Congress, and yada, yada, yada. And it was a pretty powerful speech. They also have had a plan on how to infiltrate and take the nation through Hamas and Hezbollah. And we've told you about this for a long time. However, I believe we are in a very dangerous state. Even Rahm Emanuel in Chicago is saying, you have to sanction these people. Because it's getting really bad. Tonight at 5 o'clock, we're going to begin a dialogue with you on just Congresswoman Omar. And what we have found on Congressman Omar is should wake you up. If you are a Democrat, and I don't mean a Democrat in Washington, I just mean an average Democrat, and you care about your country, you need to watch this. If you have a friend who's a Democrat, you have a friend who is Jewish, you have a friend who's not an anti-Semite, should be all of them, send this episode to them. This is a very important episode. Jason, give us the headlines of what we're going to reveal tonight and how we're putting it together.
So when you first
when we first started talking about Omar, I just wanted to like see like I was trying to find out where the origin of our anti-Semitism was. Mm-hmm. So we just started looking at that, and the more and more I got into looking at that, her like entire like story is this weird like spiral of crazy town.
Yeah, we have to start the show tonight, and what's crazy is we have to start with something that is not verified, and I hate doing that. But the AP has done investigations, and the AP says this isn't right. Far as there's something wrong here, and it leads us to believe these things, but we can't verify any of them because she has deleted all of it, or she is she won't answer any questions on it. But there's some crazy things on how she and her family got into America that really need to be cleared up.
Yeah, there's then that's just one. We're going to look at three different things that are not verified right now. That if it hit anybody else, it would be like national scandals. It'd be plastered all over the media. There'd be investigative journalists at the New York Times, Washington Post, all over this. You know they would.
These are big.
And especially like she refuses to answer to any of these scandals.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, she's actually gone in and looks like deleted evidence that would have proved it otherwise.
And there is evidence, really good, solid evidence. That's what the AP is. I mean, we're not just taking this from blog sites or something. We are looking at it and what is the closest to verified. And even the AP says this is really pretty strong stuff here. And she keeps deleting these things. The perjury that she has committed on the way she or her brother or her husband came into the country. She testified on something, and we have evidence tonight that's an absolute total lie, and she knows it. And we're not the only ones who have said this, but we're probably now the biggest ones to say this. And you need to see it, because in the next chapter in the tonight's episode, in the second tier, we go into her connections to Hamas, Hezbollah, CARE, all of these really, really dark organizations.
And yeah, you talked about infiltration into the government. I've been looking at this for a while, and I've never seen it at the level that it is now. There was a shot of Linda Sarsour with a group of men last week when they went to go support Omar when this vote was going down, the anti-Semitism vote.
So I sent Jason a video that I found of Linda Sarsour and this group of men going in to Congresswoman Omar's office. And it was really odd. And there was a former Muslim woman from the Middle East who was videotaping it, or she had her phone, and she was like, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" And they're blocking her. And they obviously knew who she was, and she knew who they were, but I didn't know. And I sent it to Jason, and I said, "Jason, look at this. What's happening here? Who are these people?"
I don't know if I should say now who that was, because I don't want to spoil, like, this. This is insane. But the main person that's there, let's just say he has been outed in court documents. He has been labeled as the FBI by the FBI as someone that supports
terrorism
in a roundabout way. Terrorism.
Yeah.
Yes. Like it's fully documented. The organization that he is the head of. I don't know why people aren't talking about it today. As far as how they were established and what their end game is, what their goal is, everyone just seems to have forgotten. And I just can't believe it. Like I would, if I was the FBI or DOJ, I would be starting an investigation today.
It's weird because I was listening to CNN today. They didn't talk about this at all. They did mention, however, that Donald Trump had a picture taken with a person who ran the spa chain that Robert Kraft went to.
Oh my gosh!
Now she doesn't currently run it, but she ran it. She opened it and then sold it, and she hasn't been working there for a long time. But
that is unfreaking believable.
Entire segment.
When you
on that.
See this, when you see this tonight, when you see this, you will be much more angry at the mainstream media than you already are, because this is locked down, with an exception of the opening segment, which I will clearly say, this part, we don't know because we can't get the information because she keeps deleting it. But we give you the a very strong case, and a very strong case that is verifiable, that she committed perjury on her way in front of an immigration court. And it's 100% verifiable. So when we show that, and then we come back after the break and show you the second part, I'm telling you, you are going to know when the president says, oh, the press is the enemy of the people. I'm uncomfortable with that. I don't like that language. But when you look at what's happening here, and they are focused on somebody who owned a spa years before anything bad happened to it, and Donald Trump took a picture with that woman, they are the enemy of the people. They're the enemy of the republic because they're not doing their job. If we had a bunch of, I don't care if they were the best of pilots in the world, the best fighter pilots in the world, if they were sitting on their bunks while a squad of F-16s from any other dangerous country were flying in, if we had a bunch of guys, the best in the world, sitting at NORAD, and they saw missiles launched from North Korea, and they were like, you know what, guys? Did you see what Donald Trump tweeted last week? And they decided to go play games. I would say they were the enemy of the United States. Well, that's the kind of misconduct that is happening right now. And that's just on this one topic. I want to come back and talk to Jason about socialism. And what we also found this weekend that is mind-boggling.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
She does. She was out at the South by Southwest, yeah. And they loved her.
Oh, my.
Loved her.
You know that CNN panel we played for you last week? They all said none of them wanted Joe Biden for president.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of them. Well, there were only six, but still. All of them love Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Mm-hmm. She's just so great in the future of the party. Really?
She's wrong on everything.
She is so ignorant on virtually every single issue. Here's what she said at South by Southwest about Ronald Reagan. This is amazing.
I think a perfect example of how special interests and the powerful have pitted white working class Americans against brown and black working class Americans in order to just screw over all working class Americans.
The unions? Is she going after the unions here, I assume?
No, you're going to be surprised. No, she's not.
Reaganism in the 80s when he started talking about welfare queens.
Right.
Remember that? So you think about this image, welfare queens.
Think about that
And
image.
What he was really trying to talk about was this, he was painting this photo. He's painting this like really resentful vision of essentially black women who were doing nothing, that were sucks on our country, right?
What?
And it's this whole tragedy of the commons type of thinking where it's like, because this one specific group of people that you are already kind of subconsciously primed to resent, you give them a different reason that's not explicit racism but still rooted in a racist caricature. It gives people a logical reason to say, oh yeah, no, toss out the whole social safety net.
Okay. She's
nuts.
Wrong on everything. Now, what she doesn't mention is that Ronald Reagan wasn't even talking about a group of people. He was talking about one specific person and giving an example of how, in some cases, the welfare system is completely out of control. He was talking about Linda Taylor. He never mentioned her by name, but that's who this was. He said, there's a woman in Chicago. She has 80 names, 30 addresses, 12 social security cards, and she's collecting veterans benefits on 4 non-existing deceased husbands. He said, and she's collecting social security on her cards. She's got Medicaid, getting food stamps, and she's collecting welfare under each of her 80 names.
Oh, my gosh.
Her tax-free cash income alone is over $150,000.
This is in the
80s. 1976.
76?
1976. She's
That's
making
like 500 grand or more.
And the woman was mostly white. She was not black. She claimed to be black a few times.
No, no.
She had Native American heritage.
No, Alexandria knows best. Yeah. I'm telling you, she knows best. Look deep into her eyes.
Dangerous. Because people are responding to her.
Well, listen to this. For anybody who says that they're not going to get rid of... They're socialists. That's a different kind of socialism than in Venezuela. I want you to hear what she said this weekend about capitalism. Here it is.
Capitalism isn't, to me, it's an ideology of capital. It puts the most important thing is the concentration of capital.
Yep.
And it means that we seek and prioritize profit and the accumulation of money above all else.
Yes.
And we seek it at any human and environmental cost.
Yes.
That is what that means.
That's what that means.
That ideology is not sustainable and cannot be redeemed.
Right. Right.
Well, if that's what... Hang on just a second. Look deeply into her eyes.
Mm-hmm.
She knows best. That's what capitalism means to her?
Yeah.
Well, that's not what capitalism actually means.
Although it's based on capital. I got that because it's part of the word capitalism, right?
Yes.
I like the part where, because I mean, how many times in our secret meetings of capitalists have we discussed the idea that we want to enrich a few people at any human cost?
Any human
cost. Almost on all of our bumper stickers.
Yeah.
It's just such an obvious
thing. It's the first thing said at all of our based on capital meanings.
Yeah, we all repeat it. At any human or an environmentalist cost. It's like...
In fact, we like it better when it hurts people. It's more fun that way.
It makes the money sweeter.
It does.
It tastes just a little better.
They say blood diamonds are bad. Blood diamonds.
Oh, blood capital is the way to go.
Blood money is delicious.
Yeah. I mean, it's so ridiculous. How can anybody take her seriously?
But they do.
They do.
Listen to this. This is a new poll. This is from Axios. Mm. Generation Z has more positive view of the word socialism than previous generation, along with millennials. It's because they don't know what socialism is. You want to know what socialism is? Venezuela. It's the new diet plan. It's sweeping the world. You'll lose 100 pounds in 60 days. They are more likely to embrace socialist policies and principles than any past generation. Government should provide universal health care. Millennials and Generation Z, 73%. Just so you know, the whole population is now 66.7. You want to talk about moving the Overton window? When we talked about this 10 years ago and said they're moving to a single-payer system, they're moving to a government-run system.
We were crazy.
We were crazy. That will never happen.
Racist.
Government should provide tuition-free college. The average person, 56.2, over 50%
say yes. Wow.
Millennials in general and Generation Z, 67%.
Jeez.
I prefer living in a socialist country, 37% general population.
Jeez.
49% millennial and Generation Z.
And 37 is way too high. Way too high. For
Go
the
ahead.
General population.
Go for it. Go for it.
They're all looking for new people to support their system. Socialist countries are more than happy to welcome you if you have any money at all to pay for any of the programs because they're all in desperate trouble and need more money. So they'll welcome you if you want to go to one. Just don't screw our thing up.
Support abolishing ICE, 29.7 for the general population. Millennial and Generation Z, 43.1.
Hmm.
Have a September 11th and you'll see how much you enjoy it. High earnings result of free enterprise, 67% of the general. Millennial and Generation Z is 71%.
That's reversed on that one, by the way, Glenn. The average population thinks free enterprises helping with wealth more than the younger generations. All the other ones, you're reading that backwards because we have a black and white printout. Oh. That's why.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Yeah, right. So this one is actually, once again, the average population is saying, wait a minute, okay, yeah, free enterprise is a good thing, leading to positive things, high earnings. And
what do the millennials think high earnings are a result of?
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's will? I don't know. Yeah.
Government should allow private insurance. Only 78% of millennials in... No?
Oh, 78% of the general public. If you see the darker line there.
Yes, 78% right. The general public does agree with that.
That's an amazing... the bottom line here, I guess, is if you look at this stuff, is that there always has been this situation where you start off as you're younger, right? And you embrace these sort of ridiculous ideas. And as over time with life experience, you wind up becoming more conservative, right? Like we've seen that. That used to be the thing of no one goes the other way. You don't start off really conservative and then wind up being liberal. Yeah. It's very rare for that to occur. As we see here, I mean, the further we get down this road, even if they back off from some of these claims, they're still socialists.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They're still so far past what the American people...
And for the Generation Z and the millennials, first of all, the education system has warmed them up to socialism.
No, it hasn't warmed them up. It has served them up.
It's put them on... Yes. Yeah. And they're on fire for it now. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, they haven't seen socialism at its worst in their lifetime, except Venezuela.
Venezuela.
And they're told Venezuela's not a good example of socialism.
But we have been told...
Look at Denmark.
I want someone on the staff dedicated. I don't care if it takes a week. I want somebody on the staff dedicated to going back and looking for every single celebrity that said this great socialist system in Venezuela. Where the hell are they?
Yeah, where are they now?
Where are they? Those people are now starving.
Sean Penn.
Yeah, that held this all up as great socialism and what we should have.
Yeah.
I do not want people to forget who brought that misery onto people. Do you know that 17 children died this weekend because the hospital, they were in neonatal care and the hospital lost electricity?
Yeah, the whole city.
Just one hospital, right?
That was one hospital.
Yeah.
One of the hospitals, 17 children died. Where are you, Danny Glover? Where are you, Sean Penn? Where are you, all you Hollywood phonies that say this is what we should have? Oh, well, maybe they just didn't do it right this time. Well, you know, Hitler didn't do socialism right either. Neither did Mussolini. Neither did Franco. Neither did Stalin. Neither did Pol Pot. Neither did Mao. I mean, how many more do you need? You're talking about taking away the free market. Do you know why they ran out of electricity? Because the country that is the most oil rich in the world couldn't deliver any oil. Why? Because the government said they could do it better than the private sector.
And they kicked out the private companies.
That's what you get.
Yeah.
That's what you get.
And in the middle of that is when we're seeing this rise of socialism here in the United States. It's incredible. It's incredible that that is happening at the same time. You have 15 candidates running for president in the United States. And I mean, by any measure other than right now, at least 12, 13, 14 of them would be considered socialists. I mean, now they're only three or four will admit to that or cop to that. They might praise Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, but only, you know, the Bernies of the world are really going to admit to it fully. I mean, Elizabeth Warren, I don't even think claims to be a democratic socialist. But still, I mean, by any measure of any time, these people, at least half this field, if not more, would be considered socialists.
And but, half this field was whitewashed by the Obama administration. Half this field was brought in and whitewashed, made to look, okay, they're all fine. They're all fine. Don't worry. They're not crazy radicals. Mm. That's the real legacy of Barack Obama. That is the thing that history will go back and look at. They will look at, he opened this door for the radical socialist Marxists to come through. And they did. And they set up shop. They knew exactly what they were doing, and they set up shop. And we're sitting around like a bunch of dummies going, gee, I think maybe, well, I don't know. They don't say they're really socialist. They really want Sweden.
Oh, we watch what you're saying with we, right? I mean, like, not this audience.
The country.
You were saying it. We said that every night.
I know. The country is sitting around saying, mainly our Democratic neighbors and friends. These guys, they are putting their head in the sand. And it is becoming, when you have Rahm Emanuel standing up and saying, guys, you need to censure these people, and they're Democrats. When Rahm Emanuel says, you have to censure these people, and they don't, Rahm Emanuel is not exactly a mainstream guy. We didn't think of him as mainstream 10 years ago. Now he's out.
He's the voice of reason.
He's the voice of reason.
Hard to believe.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program. Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
I am really, I'm both excited and nervous about today's show. I'm nervous about today's show at 5 o'clock because I'm afraid, you know, of how many people will not see it. And it drives me nuts. Tonight is a very important show, and it is beginning of this next season here before summer. We are going to be exposing and connecting the dots like we used to at Fox and show you what's really going on. Tonight, Congresswoman Omar and the history of her life and who she's connected to, and nothing to see here, people, according to the mainstream media. A lot to see. Please join us at blazetv.com. Join us tonight, 5 p.m. blazetv.com/Beck, promo code Beck.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, it's Glenn, and I want to tell you about something that you should either end your day with or start your morning with, and that is The News and Why It Matters. If you like this show, you're going to love The News and Why It Matters. It's a bunch of us that all get together at the end of the day and just talk about the stories that matter to you and your life. The News and Why It Matters. Look for it now wherever you download your favorite podcast. Our chief researcher, Jason Batrill, is with us, and he is... Been working on a story here for the last 3 weeks that we're going to be doing tonight on Congresswoman Omar, and you really need to see it. Please sign up for the Blaze, blazetv.com. Use the promo code Beck. You're going to save 10% if you sign up for a year, but you can just try it out. But watch tonight's show, please, and then spread it to your friends, especially Democrats. They have to wake up onto who these people are. There are really dangerous people. And tonight, it just happens to be Congresswoman Omar. And so he's been dealing with this. And at the same time, dealing with your daughter. Can I bring this up?
Yes, go ahead.
Dealing with your daughter who is who's dating.
You know, you've had me look into some very scary things before.
Yes.
And I've like walked away from work with just a complete pale face.
Right.
And that pales in consideration.
You were actually in and around when the hairy back guy after 9/11 was interrogated.
Yeah.
So you've been around some spooky things.
Doesn't even compare. Not at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. My daughter now, she turned 16 back in December. And I was like, okay, this was how it went for me. Like, my mom said that you can date when you're 16 years old.
Yes.
That was a huge, like, you know, pivot point
yes.
in my life. So I was like, you know, I'm gonna give that to her, too.
Mm-hmm.
She, you know, I trust her. You know, she's very
same
responsible.
Role we have. Yeah.
Was 16?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, okay, fine. But I, you know, that's one of the things you just kind of say, but you don't even really think it's going to happen soon.
Yeah.
But lo and behold, 2 weeks ago happened. And so I had a rule, right? I had a rule, but I didn't.
What do you
mean
you had a rule?
I had a rule of how this was supposed to play out. I just didn't properly, like, convey it, I guess, because I was just kind of like, okay, yeah, you can date now. But I didn't fully go into it.
All right.
But the rule was supposed to be, yes, you can date if the gentleman comes to the house, I meet him, hands are shaken.
The gentleman?
yeah, that, very lightly.
Right,
you know.
Yeah.
But so that was supposed to be the rule. Well, I get a call from a very nervous wife a couple weeks ago.
Your wife?
From my wife.
Mm.
And she's like, okay, yeah, I don't know how to tell you this, but this is like a Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And Alexa just went on her first date. And I was like, what? Like, what do you mean? She's going to go on, like, on Friday? Like, no, she goes, no, she's there now. And I was like, what are you talking about? And she's like, well, apparently this, you know, boy asked her, and he's very, very hardworking. He works on the weekends. He couldn't come to the house, you know, and do all that. So he just wanted to take her to a movie and, like, a coffee, you know, a quick coffee, like, right after the movie, and we'll pick her up at, uh-huh. like 5. And I am just like, instantly, you know, as a dad, like, your world just ended. You know, like, everything just stopped.
So you didn't meet the boy?
No.
Please tell me you were there to meet him when you went to pick her up.
All right, so critique me here. So this all is right. how I handled it. I was like, so I had this full speech ready to go when she got home. We'll get into that later. But then, like, so, like, we go to pick him up, and, you know, I'm rocking my best, like, I'm in a tank top, even though it was, like, 30 degrees outside.
Right.
The window's down.
Gun, you know, oil on your hands.
Yeah, like, like, you can't see this on radio, but, like, you know, I'm, like, kind of, like, doing the flex mode as I'm leaning on the window. And so, like, they're sitting at this coffee shop. She knows I'm about to pull up. I pull up, and then my wife is, like, hiding her eyes because she's, like, nervous about what's about to happen. My son's in the back seat cracking up. And I see them. He looks over, and I kind of, like, give him, like, the little stink eye. Mm. And he, like, kind of smiles and does a little wave. Turn my head 90 degrees the other direction.
You get out of that car, dude. You get out of the car.
I, like, but see, I wanted to, like, so I didn't want to embarrass her, right? So I didn't want to embarrass her
first
at that
of all,
point.
First of all. That is a parent's number one job.
To embarrass.
You embarrass. If you haven't said to your children, hey, you're going to a movie. Great. You can go to the movie. I'm just going to go and dance with a T-shirt that I made with your face on it that says my daughter. And I'm going to dance in the lobby in sandals with white socks and shorts. And then do it.
Okay, so, like, I'm debating that strategy, actually, as we're doing this. But I'm like, this is, like, very, very critical. I saw this as a very, very, like, pivotal moment. So I'm like, I don't want to completely turn her off, you know, and completely embarrass her because I don't want to turn her against me.
Mm.
Because she's 16. Like, mm-hmm. I know you know all about this, but, like, there's just, you can never predict those emotions at that age. Stu, you'll get here pretty soon.
I can't predict emotions of my wife.
That's true.
You know? I mean, it's
okay,
like,
that's true.
Yeah.
But so anyway, so we get home and I'm like, you know, Alexa, family room right now. And my wife's following. And I was like, okay, first off, I just want to say, I think it's really cool, you know, that this boy asked you out. Second of all, it'll never happen this way again. And I was like, this person has to meet me. If he wants to take you out, he has to come to the house. He has to come inside. We have to talk.
Good for you.
I was like, I will not make it embarrassing. I promise. I will not be cleaning a gun.
Don't ever promise that.
You know, at the same time.
Oh, you're a fool. You're a fool.
But I was like, but he's not going to want to date me if he does this. And I was like, and that is exactly the type of person I'm trying to protect
you
from.
If he's not mm-hmm. willing to do that, nope.
Right.
Nope. It's no big deal. It's no big deal. It's common courtesy.
Now, she said, but it's not. It doesn't work that way anymore, Dad. Like, this
well,
is
it
not,
does in my house.
She said the 50s, but I was. Yeah. This
does
was the early
90s
for me.
Does in my house. Well, you know what? Then you know what does work? When I pulled up, he should have walked over to the car and introduced himself to me.
Yeah.
It shows me he's a boy of poor character.
Yeah, well, I was giving him a ticket to the gun show, so maybe he was a little bit intimidated at that point.
I doubt it. I've seen you in a tank top, unfortunately, and I don't think he was intimidated.
You got it.
Maybe
you
in the military days, my friend.
You have military friends. You were in military intel. What is wrong with you, man? Well, you do a psych op on this young boy.
Well, I have an update. It's no longer needed. That to go to that step.
Okay.
Because a week goes by and I'm like, you know, Alexa, I told you you're game on to do this. Yeah. Like, what's happened? She's like, well, you know, make a long story short, he didn't want to come and do that. He didn't want to come to the house and do the meetup.
Wow.
Did not want to do that. And I was like, go back to him. Say, look, it's game on. My dad is cool. You know, like, that's all it is. It'll be really quick. It'll take literally 60 seconds and then you'll be out and we'll go do whatever. He did not want to do it. So this past Friday, I mentioned it again. She goes, Dad, do not bring up the name of that boy. I do not want to talk about him. I never want to see him again. I was like, this is what I was protecting you from. Listen to me.
Good.
So we did it. I think the PSYOP was like the next step, but wasn't even needed. So if you're looking into asking out.
It's always needed just for fun.
Yeah. You sound like there's some experience. You had some experience.
Oh, me? No. I will tell you that I knew who my daughter was going to marry because she would bring the boy in. The boy had to meet dad and everything else, you know, and then she goes to college. And when she's dating this boy, she doesn't tell me at all. She's dating him for a while. She doesn't tell him who I am either. And so she's just like this. You know, so your folks, you know, what's your dad do? You know, he's in business. You know, it's that kind of thing. She didn't say anything.
He's an entrepreneur.
Oh, that's really cool. Until the night before, she said, you have to go meet my dad. And then she said, he was clueless. He was just clueless. He said, okay, who's your dad? And she said, Glenn Beck. And he said, okay, so who is he? And she said, Glenn Beck. And this is in New York at the height of, you know, everybody saying I'm the Antichrist. And she said, Glenn Beck. And he said, I don't know who that is. And she said, yes, you do. And he said, no, I don't. And she's like, now she's getting offended. No, my dad's a big deal. And so she's going off on this. So he says, it's no big deal. It's no big deal. He goes home and he Googles me.
Oh, no.
Now, he's up all night now because he's been Googling and it's me going, you little pinhead, get off my phone, all of that stuff. And he comes in and the office doors open. This is when we had a corner office in Manhattan. Opens up, we have the whole floor, and right by the elevators are all these crazy pictures of me, you know, life size of doing crazy things. And he's just like a scared rabbit now.
He met you in the office?
He met me in the office.
With the corner office, like, overlooking New York City,
and
like
I said,
an overlord.
And I said, I looked at, because my daughter was so, because I had done all of the psyops before, my daughter was doing on him. And she comes in, and she sits down, and he sits down, and I said, nice to meet you, Tim. And he's like, yes, sir, nice to meet you. And Hannah said, you know, I think I'm just going to leave you two alone. And he looked at her like, good God, no. He's going to throw me out of one of these windows. She left. And we had a nice conversation. And I didn't have to do any of the operations that I had done before because I did them to her early. And she learned. And she knew. She prepared him for dad's going to be, and I didn't have to be.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Ronald Reagan said, freedom is never more than a generation away from extinction. And he was absolutely right. The question is it this generation? We told you earlier on the program about the latest poll on socialism. It is polling wildly favorably with everyone who is under 40. We have people now that are talking about openly at South by West, Southwest, calling capitalism a failed experiment and that it has no future. Capitalism, the free market system. That person is Ocasio-Cortez. So, we know about socialism. We know that about 99%, I think it's like 97% of the American population cannot name the five freedoms guaranteed in the First Amendment, let alone the 10 amendments in the Bill of Rights. Now, these are the things that the government cannot, must not ever violate. If we don't know them, we lose them. The Second Amendment is the one that everybody seems to talk about, but they don't seem to understand the words thou shalt not, or not thou shalt not, shall not, the government shall not infringe. See if this is an infringement. They have announced now a red flag gun confiscation bill, and the hearing is set for the end of this month. And they're looking for common ground. Now, when I say they've said it and looking for common ground, they believe they can find it. Who is it that's saying that? It's the GOP. The GOP says that they have a common sense red flag confiscation bill. They've set the hearing, and when Lindsey Graham announced it, he said that he had spoken with the president about the bill and that President Trump is on board. Now, what is the bill? It's Senate Bill number 7, and it would use federal funds to help states implement extreme risk protection orders. Now, what is that, Stu? What do you think that is? An extreme risk protection order.
This is the sort of thing that was discussed about, I want to say it was Parkland afterwards, because the idea is a lot of people had an indication mm-hmm. that this student may be a problem. Mm-hmm. And everyone around him said, yeah, we knew he was dangerous, so there's nothing we could do about it. So
no, and that's not even true. In the Parkland shooting, mm-hmm. that's not
no,
even true.
I'm not
true.
Saying it's true.
Yeah, the school had the ability to do something. They didn't. The FBI had the ability to do something. They didn't. The police had the ability to do something. They didn't.
Right. However, this is an idea that if there's a bunch of people around you, you could say, if we all think that, you know, this person is a, he's a danger, he's got a lot of guns, he's making me nervous, so we could go to somehow a judge, the government, and say, hey, this guy's a real problem, and hopefully they would look into it.
Okay.
That's the theory behind
that's
the red
the theory
flag.
Behind it.
Yeah.
Let me tell you what the red flag extreme risk protection order will actually do. If anyone is accused, of committing a crime or thought to be of danger and has a weapon, they are taken away. The police will be able to confiscate guns based on nothing more than hearsay of a disgruntled family member or friend, or perhaps somebody who really does know. But how many times do you think, if you are a gun lover and you're getting a divorce and it's ugly, if you, let's say, are a gun lover and you cheated on your spouse or you cheated on your girlfriend and she wants revenge, do you think there's a chance she might go to police and say, by the way, I just want you to know, I think he's a danger? You don't have to be mentally ill. If you have an argument with a neighbor, they'll be able to turn you in just saying, I think you might be, he might be dangerous, and they have to go in and take your weapons. And they take them for a year.
There's no
No court.
Oversight to this?
Nope.
No, no court. Judge ruling on whether this is a legitimate claim?
Nope. They would be able to, a judge would be allowed to take your guns and suspend your Second Amendment rights for up to a year after they've been taken. But you don't even hear that side of the story. You're not there. They can take your guns. Hmm. They listen to the person, and they can keep your guns for up to a year. This is what happened in Gary Willis in Maryland. It happened last year. An angry family member wanted to get back at him after having an argument. He told police that he needed to have his guns taken away. An officer showed up at 5 o'clock in the morning, demanded that he surrender all of his firearms. He refused. A scuffle broke out, and he was shot and killed by police. He was never charged with anything. It was a disgruntled neighbor. And he's like, you can't come into my house and just take my guns. This is a GOP bill. Instead of police or prosecutors having to go to a judge and say somebody is mentally ill or they broke the law, the burden of proof is completely shifted. It is now shifting to the gun owners having to prove that they are okay. They have to prove, after the guns have already been taken, that they deserve to have their rights back. The gun owner is not even invited to be at the hearing where the confiscation is first declared.
Imagine this without the rights. You'd have to prove your sanity before you were able to speak freely. You would have to prove you were worthy before things like, I mean, even like voting, right? I mean, the whole point of the...
Yeah, I know. It's really hard to imagine a society that says, let's say that you have to prove you're not a racist because of something that you tweeted. Or you have to prove that you didn't sexually assault someone, but they claimed it online and the population has declared you a rapist.
Yeah.
or whatever.
It's institutionalizing what we have
exactly
in like a Twitter mob culture.
Yes, it's exactly that.
It's very scary, especially when it comes to a constitutional right. I mean, again, like, you're not allowed to infringe this if you want to. Here's an idea where this is a situation where a random person can start saying that they feel you're unstable, and that right goes away. Not because you've been convicted of something, not because
they can just dislike you.
A doctor or somebody has said, at least with some authority, that you have instability mentally, or you've been confined to an institution.
And they take them first, then they show you the case.
That's not, I mean, that's
not America.
Not be constitutional, though.
This is the Republicans. This is Lindsey Graham.
I don't think Lindsey Graham cares at all about the Constitution. I mean, he's, you know.
No, but I mean, if that's our friends,
right?
Who
exactly.
needs enemies?
Who needs enemies, right?
All right, there's another.
Imagine what Bernie Sanders does as president of the United States.
Did you see the California rep that came out and said the only way to really control guns is to change the Second Amendment and ban all guns? And they're now starting a petition to repeal the Second Amendment.
Well, good for him, first of all, because he's right.
Yes.
The only way to infringe on people's gun ownership rights is to repeal the Second Amendment. Now, that's only the very beginning of that process,
mm-hmm.
and you're not going to like the other steps, because then after that were to happen, states all over the place would put it in their state constitution, and you'd have to pass a whole nother...
Yes.
amendment that would ban,
mm-hmm.
So you'd have to repeal and ban at the same time, which would be even harder.
Mm-hmm.
Then you'd have a society with 400 million guns on it, with, let's say, 300 million of them in the hands of people who have no intention of giving them back to you. So good luck going door to door to collect 300 million guns around this country.
They won't do it, though. They'll do it like they did in Germany. Remember, the German people, they were hunters. They went out and they shot their own food. There were a lot of guns in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
So what did they do? First, they did the national database, so they knew exactly who had what guns. Then, instead of confiscating, you had to turn them in.
Right.
And it was, it started out, I think, as a 10-year penalty if you didn't. And then after a few months, they gave you a warning and said, by the way, anyone seen with a gun will be shot, no questions asked. So then those people who didn't turn in their guns were actually shot going to the police station trying to turn their guns in. Mm. That's why the population was toothless when Hitler really started doing bad things. There was no one that could stop them because they had all the guns.
Right. I mean,
look. By the way, just a quick side note. In 2012, that's when Venezuela lost their right to guns because that wonderful utopia, socialism utopia, they thought the guns would be dangerous in the hands of the people, so that's why they can't fight back. Just want to throw that in there.
Hmm. It's interesting. Interesting parallel there. Yeah, I mean, I think that, look, that this would be almost impossible to do in the United States. Almost impossible.
Because don't think it, so.
What?
I don't think so.
No, I'm not. You don't. You think, just yes. Look, this population, you think, with the culture that has been ingrained here, the most heavily armed, they always say this as an insult, the most heavily armed society in the history of the planet. Well, yeah. Yeah, we are. It's because this whole guaranteeing people's rights, right to bear arms, has put together a country that is almost impossible to go door to door. Think about this. Our military, the best military in the history of the world, look at the problems it's had going door to door to root out people like ISIS and the Taliban and Al-Qaeda in countries that have almost no weapons compared to what we have. Can you imagine trying to go door to door to collect 300 million guns
in this country?
They will make
an example of a few people. They will come to the doors of, you know, Wayne LaPierre or me, mm-hmm. and they'll say, turn over your guns, and I'll say no, and then they'll make an example.
Well, your guns, though, you're not a good example, because all your guns were lost.
Well, yeah, they were lost.
There's a pterodactyl that came in and picked them up.
I don't know, that's just
them.
One theory. Okay. I think that's a crazy one, mm-hmm. but...
they're all gone now.
I
you
was
have
just
no...
on my way to report them.
You were?
As missing.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. But remind me, because if I don't report them, I'll have to report them. You know, I gotta just remind me.
Yeah,
that was all taken.
It's just a terrible tragedy.
Don't know what happened to them. Anyway, let me tell you about what's happening now in Washington State. There is another gun law that is being passed in Washington State that the sheriffs have said we're not going to enforce. And I've told you before, support your local sheriff. Because your local sheriff is the one who will stand between you and your guns, you and the Constitution, or you and whoever wants to take the Constitution away. We're seeing this now happen in Washington State, and now they're coming after the sheriffs because they are saying this is unconstitutional and we will not abide by this. We will not enforce this law.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
I look on my list of people that we're going to have as guests in upcoming days. I looked on Friday, and I see Oren Hoffman, who is a guy who runs SafeGraph, which this is how the company is described, building geospatial truth sets. Well, thank God somebody's doing that.
Oh, yeah.
I've been thinking of that for a long time. No idea what that is described that way, but he's a guy who his company says... data is really important, and there should be one, like, central library for it. And as long as all of the information, all of the names and people are stripped out of it, there should be a place like a safe library. So if you're an inventor and you're like, I need data on this, you can go get that data. It shouldn't be held in the hands of so few, because the more you open that data up, the more you're going to be able to innovate
while still protecting privacy concerns.
Correct. So that's real. What his company does. He's on the phone now. Oren, how are you?
Hey, how are you?
Very good. Very good. You know, it wasn't me that put you on the list of people to come on. Actually, it was Stu. He saw a tweet of yours. And he brought it to me, or he brought it to the producers. And then we were talking about it the other day, and I'm like, I know. How did I not think of this? So welcome to the program. Glad to have you here.
Oh, well, I'm happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
So we wanted to talk to you really about a couple of things. First of all, we were just talking about data and how South by Southwest, all these politicians were out. And they were all talking about socialism and everything else. And Elizabeth Warren and Amy Klobuchar have now come out and said they want to break these companies up to the point where Apple wouldn't be able to have an Apple app on their app store. You know, it's crazy. Are you seeing any kind of fallout or getting skittish at all on Washington out in Silicon Valley?
Well, I think there's definitely a movement of people that are taking this like breakup very seriously, mm-hmm. In Silicon Valley. And there are a lot of people on different sides of things who find some of those arguments compelling. And so I think that will have a lot of legs over the next few years. And it's a political argument that is that we should expect to be made.
I'm concerned about public-private partnerships with some of these companies. Does that concern you at all?
What do you mean?
You know, that these companies, because I feel like at some point the politicians are going to know if we had, you know, our fingers in big tech, we could use this to help move populations a certain way or whatever. And big tech will know, if we don't play ball with them somewhat, they're gonna just break us up. So let's get into bed fully with each other. Do you think that's a possibility?
I that may be a bit higher than my pay grade. So okay. I'm not 100% sure whether okay. that's a possibility. Or
okay.
Not.
Let me talk to you a little bit about AI. I just talked to somebody just last week who said they don't even think that, you know, artificial general intelligence is something that's going to happen. I've talked to another friend who told me that DARPA is running an algorithm. I don't even know how this works. You probably would. That is looking to see if anyone has started any kind of artificial intelligence. He said that they told him privately that it was looking like somebody was either started it or on the verge of releasing some sort of artificial intelligence. If it's not us, we're in trouble. Do you agree with that?
That's right. Yeah. And there's varying degrees. We don't have to get all the way to AGI every step in the direction of artificial intelligence is important for the United States. As a military power.
How far behind China are we?
I'm not sure if we're behind China or not, but I do know that China and Russia both have amazing engineering teams, and they're working on this aggressively, and it's a priority for both countries.
The last time we spoke, I asked you a question. I said, I feel like we need some sort of a Manhattan Project. You know, we have to do something, but I don't want a Manhattan Project because I don't trust the government. And yet I don't trust Google either. Who do we trust?
Yeah, I'm not sure. One kind of simple solution just could be to make sure that the best AI scientists are in this country. And so, you know, if you just think of artificial intelligence as the most important battlefield, and our rivals like Russia and China think it also is the most important battlefield, then we want as many of the top brains in AI residing in the U.S. and having a positive attitude toward the U.S.
So what brought this to Stu's attention was that you tweeted a while back that you thought we needed a Manhattan Project, and I want you to outline that. But it's not really a Manhattan Project like I think of a Manhattan Project, where it's the government actually running it. It's just the government enabling people to come in. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, exactly. In some ways, like, it's similar to gathering like the top rocket scientists post World War II. You want as many of these great AI engineers as possible. And there's likely less than 20,000 top researchers in AI in the world. And at least half of them live outside the U.S. today.
Wow.
And many of them live in places like Canada. The University of Toronto is one of the top AI centers in the world, but they also live in China and Russia, India, France, Israel, Iran, you know, Germany, UK, Japan, South Korea, you know, many of these countries. And so we should have a system, I think, to identify these people and then to attract them to the U.S., either give them some sort of special visa, give them things like stipend, visa for their spouse, some sort of fast track to becoming a citizen. Get these people here, get these people happy, because we want as many of these people here as possible. And there's not that many. We're not talking about hundreds of thousands of people. We're talking about maybe 10,000 worldwide who attract to the U.S.
Could we attract them? Because I know these countries are gobbling these people up and not letting them leave.
Well, it might be harder to attract them from Russia and China, but you know, many of these people who are in other countries would be very happy to live in the U.S. if we were able to give them a compelling reason to come.
What is the, for the average person, Oren, people, they don't have a concept of what this means. They don't know why the government is, you know, so worried about 5G. Explain what the world looks like with the AI that you think we could have soon.
Well, I think AI is just a very important for both attacking and defending militarily. So AI can help, if you just think of it as purely from a cyber warfare, AI is both really important if you want to defend your assets. So if you want to defend your nuclear assets or whatever else you're defending, and then also very important if you're attacking other people's assets. And so and it doesn't have to be AGI, like you mentioned at the top of the show. It just could be some sort of incremental improvements over what we have today. And every incremental improvement makes you as a power more fearsome, both as a defender and as a and on offense as well.
We're talking to Oren Hoffman. He is the founder. Are you the CEO too of SafeGraph?
I am. Yeah.
Okay. Of SafeGraph.com from Silicon Valley, and I know that you call yourself a optimistic pessimist. I call myself an optimistic catastrophist. Explain what an optimistic pessimist is and why.
Well, I think it's important to be a realist. So I'm optimistic about the future, but also a realist as well.
So, Arne, we've been spending a lot of time on this show talking about immigration, and a lot of it, the conversation tends to go to a point where, okay, we're talking about is there a wall? What's going on at the border? But there are a lot of smart things I think we can do as far as immigration. And I think your policy, your idea kind of stems part of that is part of that conversation is not just making, business easier for businesses to come in and operate in these circles. But also when we're talking about attracting these scientists, it's maybe, do you think is it a special visa? Is it, how do we actually get people to come here to the United States to develop these things for us rather than for China or Russia?
So one thing is, I think it's really hard is just identifying these people, and having some sort of way where other core AI researchers vouch for you, and there's some sort of way to identify these people. I don't think that is such a simple thing, and especially for like a government entity to go do. Once we do that, making sure that they can come here easily, that. It's also really important that their spouse can work. So getting a simple way for their spouse can work and get a visa, getting some sort of citizen fast track, giving them other reasons to come in. Immigration is really important for getting these top scientists here. I think maybe the debate is almost over emigration. I think that's something like a China or Russia, they're probably less likely to let their top scientists emigrate. They're probably very happy to have people immigrate.
And they are trying to tap our top scientists.
I don't know. So that's I haven't heard of that, but
I do.
certainly they should be certainly they should be.
Yeah. Oren, thank you so much. We'll talk to you again. Appreciate it. Oren Hoffman.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
You bet. CEO of SafeGraph.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.